Last week I was talking about an equation, a series of numbers, 4636172. Last week was part one of the two-part talks that we're going to deal with this set of numbers. And I think if we know these numbers, our chances of being happier, more successful, healthier, are greater. So last week I dealt with the four, which had to do with the four driving needs in the human personality, the kind of hardwired into us. I dealt with the six, and those refer to the six steps of my energy model. Some years ago, I realized that if energy was so important, I better understand it better. And so through my praying and journaling and meditating and thinking, I arrived at that model that seemed to be pretty much all-encompassing about the way we interact with energy. And then the third number was three, and I dealt with the idea that three areas of conflict have to do with unfulfilled expectations, thwarted intentions, and either undelivered or unreceived communication. So if we recognize having upset or conflict between us and someone or something else, it's likely we're going to see one or two or three of those factors involved in it. So today I'm going to start in with the last four numbers, the 6172. The six has to do with how we react when our four driving needs are not being met, when they're interfered with. How do we act when we don't get what we want? That's an important thing. If you're going to develop a relationship with somebody, and including yourself, that's a good question to keep in mind. How do they react when they don't get what they want? You can see a lot about a person, and you can know a lot about yourself by doing that. So the idea is that if our driving needs are not met, or we are interfered with the six steps in the energy model, maybe one or more of those things are interfered with by other people or by ourselves because of our belief systems, or we create expectations that are continually unfulfilled, or we continually recognize after the fact that our intentions have been thwarted, maybe because they were ill-defined, maybe because we draw the opposition to them, or our communications, or we keep it to ourselves and don't communicate it, or we deliver it in such a way, maybe with an expectation that the other person is not going to listen anyway, so we lack intentionality in our communication. So the six that I'm going to start with today deals with a way to look at the six most predictable ways that we react when we don't get what we want. This is what human beings seem to do. So you can look at the six and see what you believe to be maybe your pattern or the pattern of people that are important to you. And of course, these reactions vary from person to person and, frankly, even moment to moment. We are attempting to be more effective at getting what we want. So we're going to use strategies, more or less effective, that we have learned, that we've seen implemented when we were children, that we have tried, that we've seen adults either use on one another or use on children or use on us, or children use various strategies on other children. So we would see these things and we would go, okay, that seems like it's workable, and we would adopt that as our own. Because the perceived underlying problem is that our, and this is perceived, right? This is the perceived underlying problem, is that our needs are threatened. So we can tend to be hypervigilant no matter what behavior of these six that I'm going to go through are. We're like, oh, there are saber-toothed tigers everywhere, behind every couch, behind every chair, in every shadow, outside, upside, down, all over the place. And in order to be safe and secure and get what we want, I got to be on hyper alert. Now, you can imagine, that sounds very stressful, and it is. So I'm going to list these six common behaviors that are reactions to our not getting what we want, not getting our expectations fulfilled or our intentions actualized or our communications delivered and received. First is sweet. Second is control. Third is detached. Fourth is preemptive. Fifth is self-punishing. And then the sixth is embracing. So this labeling is arbitrary. You might want to add others. You might want to change the labeling of it. But let me explain it. Sweet is the behavior that you see sometimes. You see it in little kids. Actually, you can see it in adults, for that matter, of where the person is trying to be so good, so helpful, so angelic, so excellent, so important to other people that nobody is going to reject her or him. Nobody is going to abandon that person. Nobody is going to be unkind to that person because they are so sweet, so good. The expectation is that nobody is going to be resistant to them getting what they want. So they have this sweet, oftentimes syrupy sweet exterior that goes along with this, hoping that this is a strategy that's going to get them what they want. Now, just like in all of these behaviors that I'm going to describe, there's a range to them. You know, it can have a, if you just imagine this as a spectrum, where a person shows only a little bit of sweetness to one who is extremely syrupy sweet. You know, and you might have heard the goody two-shoes kind of thing, you know, the apple polisher, a child in a school and a brown noser. That kind of describes a couple of points on that spectrum. Now, this is not to be confused with the idea of being helpful. Helpful is an important human characteristic. We want to be useful. If I were to talk about human needs, I would say that I use seven to make it clear to me because they're easy to remember and they seem to be encompassing enough. Although if you wanted to search on human needs on the internet, you'd find a gazillion websites and book after book written about it. But in a nutshell, if you look at survival, freedom, usefulness, there's where you find being helpful to other people, love, identity, the need to be right, the need to look good, get approval is the seventh one. So if you look at that, survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, need to be right, need to look good, get approval, you go, that's what. And so if we look at those as our needs, you know, how do we go about getting them? So being helpful, that's an important thing. But being obsequious and fawning and unctuous, you know, that's not helpful. And not really authentic either. Coming across as a slippery character, you know, those show up in movies. But you can imagine you may have seen them in your own life. Those are the kind of people who are... although unctuous means oily, but you can see them faking sweetness. But that sweetness is like being offered a Trojan horse. It's not the real them. It's fake. It's fake. Here's a thought that had just occurred to me. Years ago, somebody said to me, oh, you know the difference in the person's two eyes, right? I go, what does that mean? He said, look at a person's eyes, and if they're equal, if they're balanced, they're the same size, that person is pretty much in balance. What they have in balance is their personality and their spirituality. One eye represents their personality that they present to the world, and the other one represents their spirituality, the true them. And what you want to do is deal with people whose eyes are equal, not people whose eyes are vastly different, because what they're presenting and who they are, not necessarily the same thing. So you might want to take a look at that as an idea to be able to see through the sweetness. I'm thinking of somebody specifically, and the first time I saw eyes, I went, okay, I'm on alert, and it turned out to be true. You might say that a sweet person contributes their energy to improve another person's conditions, while at the same time they are furtively, sneakily, sometimes covertly advancing their own self-interest. And they're using a strategy that makes the most sense to them. So, you know, it's like, we all want to get what we want. We all want to act in our self-interest, and we do, according to our level of awareness. So the strategies we use are really based upon our level of awareness. If we use a club to get what we want, embezzle funds or rob a bank, or, you know, that's a level of awareness indicator right there. Years ago, a friend sent me a book about sweet people, and there are a lot of books written about them, but this is what is written about them, about those sweet people exploding into destructive rages, right? Going ballistic, going postal, have road rage, and literally ending up murdering whole bunches of people. And I would say because their overall belief or strategy of being sweet didn't give them any outlet for something other than sweetness. So you go, ooh, that's a problem. That's a problem. So, you know, we're human. We have this whole range of emotions. We're happy, sweet, and angry, and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, we can choose where we want to live, but the fact of the matter is, as human beings, we're going to have those experiences. So if we experience them and let them go, then we can get back to a higher vibration. The second strategy that people use is control. This is how they want to get their needs met. If I can control everybody, everything, the weather, everything, then, you know what? It doesn't allow anybody any opportunity to abandon me or to thwart me or to not deliver. I'll control them and force the issue of them doing my bidding. So there's people try to bring that into physical manifestation, all that, but it doesn't work. And there's plenty of evidence in everybody's life that trying to control another person doesn't work. I'll go back to the needs I just mentioned a minute ago. Survival, freedom. Guess what? Freedom is real important to us. Somebody else trying to control us, go like, I don't like that. That doesn't feel good. I don't want to be controlled. Exactly. We need to be able to have our own thoughts, our own words. We need to be able to move our bodies. We need to be able to say what we want. And so somebody who's trying to control all of that is going to run into a lot of resistance from us. And if they were to look at that, they would go, you know what, trying to control this person and that person, first of all, it's aggravating the heck out of them, it's futile, it's not really working, plus I'm using all my energies to control them instead of trying to meet my needs in a more effective way. Because of the work I do, I deal with people who have illnesses. They're like, I'm trying to control. It's like, yeah. Plan B would be use that energy that you're trying to control everybody in your family and use it to control yourself so you can open up and allow yourself to be healed. And frankly, I've had people who I can't. I have to keep trying to control. It's like, yikes. Really? And they think it's workable. It turns out not to be workable. I've had a couple of clients who actually control themselves to death. In my opinion, cause of death, control. They controlled themselves to death. Now, I just thought of a third person. I had three clients die, and all of them, that would be my diagnosis. Cause of death, control. Not self, but others, and it didn't work. And that energy never got used effectively. You know, when it comes down to it, I'm a firm believer in this idea that when you're talking about control, self-control is the only meaningful form of control. If we can control ourselves, it's like, what's that going to do? Well, with very little effort, it's going to make us feel good about ourselves. That's meaningful. Good feelings about ourselves, an increased sense of effectiveness. Yeah, that's a good thing. The third behavior that is pretty observable is for people who are not having their needs met and believe they're not going to get their needs met. It's like, what's the point? What's the point? I'm going to withdraw. I'm going to withhold my energy. I'm not going to extend my energy, and I'm going to try to detach so I can't feel anything. And we could use a lot of other words that apply to this, because uninvolved, uncommitted, up in their head, even depressed. And I think this is based on this whole approach, right? Withdrawal, withholding your energy, you stop the energy flow. That's not healthy. That's pretty easy to understand. It's based upon the depressing idea that no matter what efforts of mind and body that I use, it's not going to change anything. So I'm not going to extend my energy. I'm just going to seal myself off. So for any of us who have learned that failure is inevitable, whatever you try for it, you're going to fail. Whatever you try for it, you're going to fail. Whatever you want, you're not going to get. That success is real elusive. It's like, So what do you do? Well, I'm not going to invest any energy in what is obviously going to be a losing proposition. That can be healed and needs to be. The fourth one, I think, may be very, very common and perhaps even the most obvious when it comes to human behavior for people who are not getting their needs met. Preemptive attack and rejection. This basically is to assume that the other people that you're going to meet, the other things that you're going to engage in, I'm going to change oil in my car and end up swearing at the car, or I got to do this and you end up getting angry about it, or you want to clean the closet and you start getting angry at the closet. We have a belief that everything, people, things, God, the world, the weather, is in opposition to us. That makes all of these things, all of these energy patterns, all of these concepts threats to us. So we're being threatened all the time. And so, I know once they get to know me, they're going to reject me, so I reject you. It's like, whoa, dude, I didn't even get a chance to say hi back to you. Yeah, I know, but I didn't want to be surprised, because surprise, shock, is the thing that intensifies pain so much for us. It's like to be caught off guard. It's like, I expected this, wham. Ooh, that was more painful than if I anticipated getting criticized, if I anticipate rejection, if I anticipate being attacked. Hey, not so painful. I expected it. So people adopt the point of view, well, I'm going to be attacked. I expect it. I'll anticipate it. They fail to realize one very important factor. That expectation, that anticipation, is what draws it to us. Like, I expect bad things to happen. Ooh, you just set your magnet going in a direction you do not want. Yeah, but I have evidence to that fact. Yeah, you may have evidence, individual episodes in your life where that occurred, but it doesn't have to be that way. So a person who preempted the attack has already gone, the best defense is a good offense. I'll just attack everybody, everything, and that rejection goes on and on. The second problem, besides it inducing that in other people, is it causes a breakdown in the body, cellular communication. So when we're rejecting our neighbors, our cells in our body are rejecting their neighbors. It's like, whoa, that's not what I had in mind. Too bad. The vibration of rejection is what we're surrounded with within and without us all around. It's like, that's not what I had in mind. No kidding. But that's how it happens. This rejection, as we practice it, we become better at it. Better at what? At seeing saber-toothed tigers everywhere. It's like, ooh, is that a good idea? Not a good idea. Not if we want to live a happy, healthy, successful life. The fifth point or characteristic is self-punishment. Self-punishment. This is where we can misbelieve that I'm to blame. I'm to blame, and I deserve punishment. And if this is rooted in early childhood, and I suspect that most of the stuff for us is, and then later in life we're just adding to these fundamental structures that we would have had planted in the soil of our consciousness when we were children, is if I can suffer enough now, then God won't punish me later. I can, like, plead, time served. Look how much I suffered, God. I don't have to suffer anymore. You know, look how awful my life was. It's like, and for those who have been brought up in a religion that thinks suffering is absolute essential, like, you're like, wait a minute. It's not essential? It's not essential? No, it's not essential. Wow, I did it. I didn't need to do it. I didn't need to punish. I didn't need to try to get ahead of the curve so when it came time to be sent to heaven or hell, I can't use that as evidence to get a lenient sentence from God. Not necessary. Not happening. That's myth. That's myth. Like, ooh. And so many things got laid on us. So that's wrong. You did that wrong. That's a sin. That's wrong. That's bad. That's wrong. It's like, I guess that means I deserve to suffer and can't have what I want. It doesn't need to mean that. Some people demonstrate this self-punishment in the way they treat their body. And I mean with, you know, the awful things they do to it, you know, how they hurt it, but also, on a more subtle level, the lack of self-care. Some of the indication, I'm not that important, you know, I'm not important to me or to other people or to creation, that's false. Nobody can take our place. We're absolutely essential to creation. When we hold on to the belief of our unimportance, we're not that important, not that valuable, we disrespect ourselves. And then we think it's justified. That's a lie. I would say in the context of the healing codes, this self-blame, self-punishment falls into the area of self-unforgiveness. Can show up as harmful actions toward ourselves with through some of our behaviors, like, whoa, that person is doing that to himself, herself. Or all of that stuff, the unforgiveness and the harmful actions, can be held in place by unhealthy beliefs about themselves, about life, about other people, about God. All can be healed. But it's not all doom and gloom, despite the first five characteristics that I just laid out. I would say there's a sixth one. It's a higher level. And I refer to it as embracing. Embracing. That is being willing to stand our ground and look at it and see this, I didn't get my needs met at this moment. Let me see if I can understand something about it. Let me, instead of having a tantrum, one of those first five that I just mentioned, let me see if I can grow in awareness about this. You go, And frankly, when we don't get our needs met, it causes us to continue to reach out in thought and feeling, and you go, as compared to, I don't have to reach. Everything I want is handed to me. That's the kind of person who spends time laying on the couch, eating bonbons, watching TV. There's very little growth in that person's life because they didn't have to reach for anything. There was no challenge. They got what they wanted, and what they wanted were all kind of physical comforts, if you will. And it's like, never experienced any kind of hardship or challenge to themselves, physically or mentally or emotionally or spiritually. No need to grow. But we can look at what we've experienced and like, oh, yeah. If I can look at that and recognize that it provided me an opportunity for greater understanding, new ways of meeting our needs, like, well, they didn't get me what I wanted. What do I do? Have a tantrum? Well, why don't you figure out a way to meet your own needs? Develop ways to become more effective at meeting your own needs, serving other people's needs. Oh, yeah. And, of course, spiritual growth. When our approaches to getting our needs met, the four driving needs, the six steps in the energy model that I described, as well as the how to deal with expectations, intentions, and communication, when they don't work, we tend to go, I got to fight if we think that's going to serve us. I got to run away if we think that's going to serve us. Or if we can hold our ground in order to reach a greater awareness, that actually will serve us. It's that choice, holding the ground, I think, is what we're reaching for. That's what we want. And if we can do that without bothering to fight or run away, which is going to be the first kind of thing that gets triggered for us, because that's kind of hardwired in there. It takes a higher level of cognition, of thought, to be able to go, wait, I'm not going to run, I'm not going to fight. That's instinct. Let me see if I can perceive this. I could also label that as quiet observation, this idea of embracing quiet observation. If we could quiet our mouth and our mind and hold still and see what awareness we can receive, the one greater than our own right now is what we need, right? Because we're like, if I have to use my own awareness, I'm going to run or I'm going to fight. It's like, I need higher level of awareness. I need to be able to perceive more than I'm currently doing. And if we can be quiet enough to do that, now all of a sudden, this higher level of awareness, I'll call it divine consciousness, can penetrate our consciousness, elevate it, and then all of a sudden, we would be in a good place. Like, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. That's a good idea. I think there is one success principle. One success principle. And that is all success, all health, all happiness comes from divine consciousness. We're in an ocean of everything we want of any significance. Not every single physical comfort at everyone. I want a bigger TV. I want a new car. I want not that stuff. The stuff we really want on a vibrational level, it all comes from divine consciousness. And success would say, if you can open to divine consciousness, we're going to be so much better off. We can have divine consciousness work for us, in us, and through us. And if I can get in harmony with this one success principle, all of a sudden, lots of things are going to become clear. Like, where do we turn? An alcoholic would say to alcohol, and a heroin addict would say heroin. It's like, a workaholic would say work. Somebody who's greedy would say money. It's like, dudes, and dudettes. Turn to divine consciousness. That's where it is. Reach out, and your needs will be met. Reach out, and your needs will be met. That is really a challenging concept because the ego is like, get out of the way, I'll do it. Gimme, grab, right? Those four driving needs. And everything we see around us, all the advertising, hey, you got a need you don't even know. We got this, you got a disease you didn't even know you had yesterday. We just invented it last night, so here it is, and you better get this prescription. Like, whoa. There are a lot of pressures that try to talk us into believing other principles of success. But that one, that success comes from the source of all success, and the way we do it is by connecting to that source. number 7 out of my sequence of numbers, 463617, is I think there are really 7 avenues of success activities. I want to be successful. I want to be successful. I think that it really involves us expressing energy. If you go back to the energy model that I talked about earlier, one of those is expression. How am I going to express energy in my unique way? Or if I go back and use this quote too, that divine consciousness works for us, in us, through us, through us. So how should I direct it? How should I direct it? I would say, if you use what Christ describes as the truth of existence in Letter 1 of Christ Returns, reveals startling truth, saying, divine consciousness is always trying to provide for its creations the following: growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival. There's a system of rhythm and all of its spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. So if you look at those first 7, it's like, if divine consciousness wants to provide for your growth, your physical growth, your mental growth, your spiritual growth, your emotional growth, well, when divine consciousness works through you, why wouldn't you want to, if this appeals to you, work on behalf of somebody's spiritual growth, mental growth, emotional growth, or physical growth? You go, oh, yeah. That's teaching. That's sharing. That's enlightening. That's educating. Yep. Or if you're more inclined to think in terms of nutrition and nourishment, that food and substances we put into our body, or even growing them, you go, oh, yeah, this is interesting. Knowing about alkaline acidity, knowing about nutritional foods, knowing about GMOs and avoiding them, and knowing how to cook and provide people with food. Last night we went out to dinner, and we think our friend who owns the restaurant is going to retire. And Marianne is a fantastic cook. And I looked at her at one point. I said, maybe we should buy this restaurant when she's ready to close. She said, I was just thinking the same thing. Now, we don't need more work. But I'm frequently saying, as a result of tasting a new creation of Marianne's, oh, this needs to be on a restaurant menu. Oh, this needs to be on a restaurant menu. So people who want to bake, want to cook, want to teach, want to serve, want to be in a restaurant business, provide nutrition and nourishment. We have a friend who is a nutritionist who started Miracles in Action, built schools and libraries and provides for water in the Guatemalan highlands to the Mayan Indians, that really deprived group of people up there. And now, having built something like 41 schools, she now has started to move into the nutrition, which is really her level of education. She was a nutritionist for Marriott for years. So you go, working on improving their diets. There's another way of allowing divine consciousness to work through you. Healing, protection, or two more. If you want to protect people, you can imagine what that's about. You could be selling anything or helping people protect themselves. You could be showing somebody how to do Taekwondo or Tai Chi or Qigong or any other kind of thing that makes them feel safer. Healing, my particular interest. My mother was a nurse. That is what got me started on this idea of wanting to know how we heal and to be able to facilitate it. I want to know how Christ healed, and I want to be able to do it as well. So the healing is the avenue that's most appealing to me, although enlightening people and educating and teaching, preaching, and pontificating come pretty easily and pretty fun for me. And, fulfillment of need. if you're going to have a business, you better be trying to fulfill somebody's needs. Otherwise, why would they need you? Why would they buy your product or service? Fulfilling somebody's need. Providing work. My brothers owned a construction company. I think providing work for people is one of the most noble things a human being can do. Because if you can provide work, if you can create a job for somebody, if you can facilitate it, even by spending money, by going to a restaurant or buying anything in a store, you're helping somebody have work. If they have work, they're getting paid. If they're getting paid, they're putting food on their table. That's fantastic. So all of that provision and creating of work and fulfilling of need are amazingly important. All of this stuff is wrapped around the one principle of survival, because that's instinctual. We want to survive, not only physically, but we want a legacy out there. If you can help people survive, my younger sister helps people write their memoirs and create a living testimony of their lives, a legacy for their families. So this idea, very clear to me and has been for years before Anne started to do that, is we're all going to die, but we don't need to take our wisdom with us. We can leave our wisdom behind. If we can help somebody's wisdom survive, we're doing a wonderful, wonderful thing. So I see those as seven avenues of success. If you want to be successful, you're going to be working, in my opinion, in one of those seven different areas. Maybe more than one, but one primary one. And the final two in this sequence is the two understandings that can relieve a lot of stress. Not just a little bit of awareness about them, but I mean understanding. They belong to us. We live according to this. And that idea is that we reap what we sow. And we know that. It's like, I guess I better pay attention to what I sow with my thoughts, my feelings, my words, and actions. Yeah, exactly. Because we don't know that. It's not taught to us. It's not promoted to us. It's not part of every church's doctrine or dogma or Sunday sermons. We think we can do stuff and we can get away with it. Oh, yeah, well, you know, 2,000 years ago, Jesus was murdered, and that pretty much absolves me for any responsibility. My sins are all handled. Not. The law of cause and effect. We will reap what we sow. Like, my sins are not forgiven? No. You're going to harvest whatever seeds you have sown. Oh, wow. I guess I better pay attention. Yeah. If we do that, if we know that that's the game, and the game is to elevate our thoughts, our feelings, our words to ourselves and others, and our actions, we're going to be so much better ahead. And if we promote the understanding of that idea, maybe more than one person will be obeying that rule, the law of cause and effect. Just, oh, wow, how about if everybody is doing that? Everybody is doing that. All of a sudden, this would be a different world. Would be a different world if we knew that we were causing our own life because of the way we think, feel, speak, and act. Ultimately, we're working to understand that we can achieve the level of consciousness that Christ demonstrated and said we could do it. We could do what he was doing and even greater things. We don't have to be cavemen and women. We can do what he did. We can elevate our consciousness to the level of a Christ consciousness. You go, Yep. How do you do that? unconditional love. Years ago, when I used to hear that phrase, I would like poo-poo it. That's ridiculous. Nobody can really love unconditionally. Well, that's certainly true of me up to this point. But as a goal, instead of choosing to be preemptively attacking every time you see something new, or controlling every time you see something new, or trying to be so sweet to keep something new from hurting you or thwarting you or not caring for you. It's like you can just observe it with eyes of love, because divine consciousness is working for us, in us, and through us. It's like, oh, that's what I got to get. I got to get that idea. I got to get that understanding. I got to get that understanding that all of this stuff is available to me. It's always available to me, so I can draw this from divine consciousness. If I can understand that what I sow is what I'm going to reap, and that the divine consciousness is constantly seeking to support me, to elevate my consciousness, I can ask for help. I can reach out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment. If I can have that understanding as well as the law of cause and effect, I'm not alone. I haven't been abandoned. I don't need to be fearful and insecure. I don't have to hide. I can be well-intentioned, and I can express myself. Whew, a lot of stress would disappear. So, there we have numbers 463-6172. I'd like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.